Temple Israel of Boston. Visit bostonjewishmusicfestival.org for more information. And tomorrow evening, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Boston University, a fundraiser for the Israeli activist group Anarchists Against the Wall. AATW is a direct action group that was established in 2003 in response to the construction of the wall that Israel is building on Palestinian land in the occupied West Bank. The group works in cooperation with Palestinians in a joint popular struggle against the occupation. Their website is awalls.org. And the event will include Noah Lekach and Eleanor Amit from Anarchists Against the Wall, photographs by Active Stills, and more. There we go. There is a small suggested donation. It is a fundraiser. The event is co-sponsored by American Jews for Just Peace, Boston, Boston Coalition for Palestinian Rights, BU Anti-Authoritarians, Code Pink, Boston, Emerson Anti-Authoritarians, Jewish Voice for Peace, Boston, and other groups. Tomorrow evening, 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. at Boston University, College of Arts and Sciences, room 522 at 725 Commonwealth Avenue in Boston. And I think we're all out of time. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. I am Linda. Thank you for joining me on What's Left. I will be back next week. I hope you will join us again. Stay tuned now for Music for Humans, coming up briefly. This is WMBR in Cambridge. Thank you.
beautiful human. I'm a Dr. Jalis Sakran. And I welcome you. I am moistened from hustling and bustling. We are joined this evening by Aurora. Aurora, marhaban.
Thank you for having me on the show again. I feel the universe is coursing and open to us all this evening.
Yeah, I think so too, Aurora.
We are slaves to its waves. Our emotions are raw.
Aurora, I understand that you have brought some guests with you this evening.
Every evening, I bring with me guests. But today, I have done so as well in the physical realm.
So first we have Antanas. Antanas, marhaban.
Good evening.
Antanas, of course, is an expert on Eastern European paganism. We also have with us this evening Erno, the potions master. Erno, marhaban.
Hello, doctor. I hope your Friday has treated you well, besides the problem with the moistness.
Indeed, Erno. This moistness issue, it poses some unexpected difficulties.
And yet in the cold harshness of winter, is moistness not welcome?
Yes, indeed. Moistness can be the potion that dispels the harsh, biting wind of winter.
Well, here also to help us dispel these winds is Zoro. Zoro, marhaban.
Thank you, Doctor, for having me on the show, as always, and thank you for the listeners. I think this moistness tonight is it is a sickness of the air. It is a reflection of the richness which we may expect, I think, of the show tonight. I anticipate that it will be very full.
Indeed, and I think that the idea of dryness, it can be so challenging, because one who is dry may be thirsty or even starved.
Yes, there is this scarcity associated with the dryness. And I think that the moistness, it reminds me, it is like the plenty, the harvest, these things.
And yet so many things begin to fail in this moistened condition. It is difficult to walk properly, to sing, to run, or to have enjoyment, because everything becomes gradually more and more rough and full of friction, difficult and chafing.
But from a certain perspective, you may say that each experience is becoming more detailed, more full.
Let us make the experience fuller. Let us expand the circle further. Aurora, I believe you have with you Dr. Sharp.
Hello there. Thanks for having me on again.
Welcome, welcome.
I'm here to help you molecularly define your moistness.
Yes, is moistness. Now, I, of course, knowing the answer to this, does moistness have a molecular component?
Of course it does. There are genetic diseases which affect your ability to sweat and create moistness.
This music, it is somewhat moist as well, I think.
It makes me feel as if I am listening to it from underneath a lake. That is how moist it is.
Perhaps it makes me think that it is listening to us.
There is certainly a moistness balance, I feel... I recall in my youth believing briefly that water made things stronger because one could take a container full of sand and step inside and sink immediately. Whereas if one poured a small quantity of water in the bucket, the soil became strong and firm, but submerge the sand, as I later discovered, in a bucket full of water, and once again it became weak. It is a strange property of an intermediate area of moistness. Being in the ocean, swimming, is pleasant, a wonderful experience. Being completely dry, in its way, is also wonderful, but having a small sheen of uncomfortable moistness can be an experience which is bordering on the torturous, slowly grinding away the cells.
Well, this is an interesting example of imbalance being balance. We want only greatness or complete lack.
All this talk reminds me of a recent dream I had. If you don't mind me becoming more abstract, in the dream, I was submerged in a pool of light. I was moist with light, if you say. And in this pool of light, there came in front of me a sunbeam. Straight as an arrow, bright as day. It lit up the world. And I fell in love with that sunbeam. It became my obsession. I followed it everywhere. It became my philosophy. I thought about it all the time. And then one day, while turning my head, the light went into a dark tunnel. And it did not come back out. It was lost. And I despaired. And This is how the dream started, and I don't know what it meant. Does anyone have any insight?
This is quite disturbing. I think it is a very uncomfortable situation for me to imagine. I am not sure if I can place myself within it or not.
Yes, and then later I became submerged in the pool of darkness that was left over. Very terrifying.
I am interested in your use of the word obsession.
How so?
Well, I think obsession, this concept of obsession, in my mind, the word especially, reminds me of these Norse mythological figures. There's Loki, who is the obsessor, and one who makes others obsess. And perhaps Antanas could help elaborate the possible sources.
Your dream. Your dream sounds to me like you have become one with the thunder god Perkunas. Your passage between the moistness of light and darkness is the lightning expanded.
Do you think that the sunbeam perhaps represents an obsession of mine, one I cannot name, but is there at all times in my subconscious?
Perkunas was always a god that fluctuated between the good and the bad. The evil darkness and the cleansing light.
This is quite interesting, I think. In my mind, there is a connection between obsession, as this word, and this balance between light and the dark. I think that obsession itself, it shares many characteristics with both the light and the dark, and also the moist and the dry.
I must say that I find this fear of darkness to be somewhat disquieting. We fear absence of knowledge. We fear unknowing surrounding us. And yet, is darkness not the envelope, the blankets that hold us, the mother that embraces us? Do we not bury our heads into her chest and experience darkness?
I do not personally do this, no.
But I feel very strongly about this concept of darkness, Aurora, because I think that it is a very primal and very basic fear, the fear of being in the victim to an invisible predator. But simultaneously, I experience the sensation whenever I drift into space, see the vast Black Sea.
Well, I'd like to interrupt by saying that we have also another guest in the studio, Rosewater, the sometimes mute.
The often silent.
The often silent, who, as our listeners do not know, I've mentioned her briefly previously. She can trace the images of those around her. And in the images, she sees and traces the aura that surrounds that person. It is often difficult to get her to partake orally in the discussion.
Hello. My name is Rose.
Oh, my. Hello. My name is Rose.
Welcome, Rose.
Welcome. I'm sorry for my shy nature. I'm very quiet.
Well, with all great artistic talents comes a downside.
I live in my head.
Rose, it sounds like you've never spoken before.
I don't speak often. Only when necessary, really. This is actually very uncomfortable for me.
Yeah, I think it is significant, because at first I was about to say that we were honored, but I feel like perhaps we must have done something to force you to speak. It's like the brilliant professor sitting in a room waiting for someone to make a mistake and is otherwise silent, and the many mathematicians that are working with him may wonder if he is there, if he is even aware. But do not test him, because he's very, very, very quick, and he has a big sword.
Yes, I have a big sword.
A Well, I mean,
when my words come out, it is quite often like a sword. It can cut deep.
That is because you can see deep.
Yes.
Now, I often bring rose water with me in my practices with more difficult patients, for she can trace their true essence, and it makes it more difficult for me to assist them.
I'm sorry, it makes it more difficult for you to assess him if she is present. I am not sure what the benefit is in this instance.
I apologize.
Yeah, perhaps, Aurora, you could elaborate.
Well, in certain cases, if it is easy for me to perceive a person, then I find that I cannot reach them as easily. If you see in front of you someone, and you see deep into their core, you've seen all of the trouble that lies in their voice, which are reflected through years of pain and aggression, it is often difficult to reach around that, to pretend this is a good, wholehearted person.
So, perhaps you are saying that a simple, normal interaction perhaps is taking some willful ignorance?
That's right. And usually, Rosewater is able to see these circumstances and draw for me an entirely different picture than what truly lays inside.
I think I can maybe explain this, because we encounter this situation in science often. If you come in with prejudice, sometimes it leads you down the wrong path. And maybe Aurora is saying that Rosewater helps her think outside of the box. Sometimes she meets with patients that seem to have an issue on the surface, and that maybe Aurora only sees that, and Rosewater, because of her genius, can see beyond that.
So you are suggesting perhaps that it is a matter of cognitive bias for Aurora, and that there is some obfuscation which eliminates this incoming expectation.
That seems exactly what I experience, yes.
Quite interesting indeed.
It recalls to my mind, and I'm sure Dr. Sharp is familiar with these experiments, but there was a series of experiments performed on mice, on the brains of mice. The brains of the mice were attached to an electrode. The electrode was discharging into the pleasure center in the brain whenever the mouse would correctly identify a truck versus, you know, an image of a truck or an image of an airplane. So the classification of these images.
How does the mouse distinguish? I'm a bit
visually
confused. But
so,
how do we know if it has...
So a random image was shown to the mouse, and the mouse would push one button or another.
Oh, there is a button.
Precisely. And if the correct button was depressed, a discharge would be made into the pleasure center of the mouse. The mice, after seeing only a few images, were able almost perfectly to identify the truck or the airplane. It was discovered that the images of the airplane were darker than the images of the truck, and unfortunately the mice were simply using darkness to determine which button to depress.
And in this case, darkness brings about pleasure.
Well, I think maybe what you're pointing out is that there is pattern recognition. and we don't necessarily know what things it is. Like, we have heuristics. We follow certain patterns, and that sometimes helps us because, you know, we can't process every detail and every bit of information, but sometimes hinders us because not everything follows a pattern.
Precisely. We are occasionally distracted by meaningless decorations.
No, I think that one example of this may be race blindness. Because people, I mean, it's been shown that people don't often, are less able to distinguish between individuals of a race other than their own. And I think that attests to some pattern recognition. You know, we look at people's faces and we don't look at their faces in detail. We just pick up on patterns. And that may result in us being able, not being able to distinguish between people of the same race because one of the patterns we're picking up on is race.
And so
that's like an intellectual darkness.
It's definitely true for voices as well. Many different races, even if they have no accent, speak in a very different manner. For example, Japanese women tend to culturally speak in a higher-pitched voice than European women.
Is this related in any way to color blindness?
It definitely is very intimately related. It is more difficult for me to distinguish between people of for example, Japanese descent than people of European descent.
Well, now I think I'm trying to remember the vision that Erno described, because this sounds very similar to me. So, Erno, if I recall correctly, this all began because of a vision that you had where you were urinating into an ocean.
Yes, I believe that is correct, Erno.
Metaphorically, I guess you can interpret it that way. But I do not believe that's actually what the vision was, Doctor.
Well, could you describe, please, because...
Well...
I have a potential interpretation for this vision.
Well, let me continue then. I made it about halfway through the vision slash dream. So, when we left off, I was lost in the pool of darkness, searching for my sunbeam, my obsession, as we called it. And I looked through the darkness. For days upon days, I gathered around me the tools to find light. The tinfoil, if you will, the camera, the flashlight. I guess you could use the light from the flashlight to find the sunbeam. And I used these tools and I searched. I searched for days, days upon days, finding nothing, nothing. And then I came upon a maze in the darkness. A maze made of storm clouds and raindrops. And it turned out that the sunbeam had gone into the raindrops, into the cloud, and became dispersed, became many colors, as we all know happens when light tends to go into clouds. And what I did was build another cloud. The light then went through both clouds and came out whole on the other side. Coherent, bright, and beautiful. And I had found my obsession again. But I believe the time without it, the time when it was lost, helped me appreciate it more. Helped me realize that there's more to life than the obsession. And that alone helped me fall even more in love with it. It helped me put it in its rightful place.
Your vision reminds me of another myth involving the same god I spoke of earlier. His daughter, Yura, the goddess of the sea, was found to be in love with a human man. And she lived in a castle in the sea of beautiful amber. When her father, Perkunas, became angry with the man and his daughter, after his constant search for her, destroyed her castle.
Antanas, this is a very interesting thing also because and my knowledge of these gods is limited. But I recall a legend about Yura that relates to Erno's vision, that it is said that the pure soul who urinates into the ocean will tame Yura, and she will become his concubine and victim.
There are many interpretations. Scholars disagree upon the fact that urine brought out the true color of the amber.
Perhaps if one is very dehydrated and a pure soul.
Possibly. But the other scholars say that the urinating only further angered Perkunas, bringing his wrath, and thus creating the waves we see washing onto the sea.
Out of the wrath of Perkunas.
I think that is a more tempting explanation. It is more complete in my mind.
I wonder if perhaps this gives us insight into the nature of obsession.
Well, Erno, I think, and I'm sorry to interrupt very rudely, but if I may have just the detail of the color of the urine in the vision, precisely, was it an unusual hue, perhaps a red or a green? Because I think that would be particularly symbolic in your case.
I'm sorry, Doctor. I'm confused. I think you are getting stories confused. It was Perkunas or the...
No, the vision. Daughter? I think we're dancing around the issue here.
I think it's quite interesting that we started this discussion about moistness, and we all know that hydration and dehydration can affect the color of urine.
Precisely. It is a duality, one of the many dualities of man. Hydration... dehydration.
Doctor, can I be blunt? Why do you interpret my dream, my vision, to be related to me urinating in a lake?
Well, I am an old man, Erno, and I can see when someone is using euphemism. You talk about the light coming out of the cloud, going into the sea. And I know, and let's be clear, all of us know, or we all knows, that this is simply euphemistic language. You are sharing a particularly vivid image that you had of you urinating into the sea.
I'm very, very sorry, but I do not draw this out of that language. Well, perhaps there is a bit of a culture barrier. I'm not sure.
From my astute scientific perspective, that is exactly what he's thinking. I mean, the light coming out of the clouds, that's obviously the sunlight, and the sun is yellow, and urine from a dehydrated person is yellow.
Well, if we...
I definitely agree with this interpretation as well, particularly in the nuances of his intonation. It is clear that there was something he was vaguely embarrassed to say over the air, but perhaps that is why we should not fish it out so
Well, I think there's nothing to be embarrassed about urine. It's a sterile fluid.
Absolutely. And Erdnil?
I do not believe urine is quite frequently embarrassed.
Well, Erdnil, let us say the following things. First, we all welcome you here, and we hope that you feel comfortable enough to be completely honest about this vision. But secondly, we all are also willing to maintain we are willing to play this game, to humor you.
The facade.
And so tell us instead what the color of the sunlight was in the vision, the so-called sunlight pouring into the ocean like a stream.
I believe in the vision it was white.
So white.
Not yellow, and sunlight is really white, it's not yellow.
So white urine pouring into the ocean.
Clear urine?
Like milk, or...
No, clear, as the doctor says.
Well, obviously he's not the chosen one.
I think that's clear. Well, before we get too ahead of ourselves and realizing that somehow we're already halfway through the program without telling anyone that they should call. I guess the circle is very big.
Perhaps we can have some more colors introduced to our ocean.
Well, all right. The number is 617-253-8810. And we would be okay with a call, but also no is fine. Because I'd really like to get to the bottom of this vision. Erno.
And to any new listeners, I'd like to encourage you to call in. Circle is about you and ourselves as well.
I am really beginning to believe the correct interpretation of the vision is my nature with obsession and how it is controlling my life. Why you are all insisting that this other absurd relationship exists, I don't know, but...
I think perhaps that the alternative explanations, there is some kind of existential transformation which takes one into the other. So they are really the same thing. We are not saying that one is not the other.
Why don't we bring an outside perspective to become an inside one? Caller, marhaban. Caller?
Marhaban.
Welcome, caller.
Thank you.
So, caller, I wonder if you have an opinion on the, not sure debate, but friendly...
discussion.
Discussion.
Admonishment.
Well, actually, I have an obsession. I have an obsession with Erno's obsession. I want to hear more about the obsession.
A multi-layered obsession. Erno, perhaps you would be willing to...
be obsessed.
Can I ask you to elaborate, caller? How are you obsessed about my obsession? What about it compels you?
No. I'm asking you to elaborate about your obsession.
Perhaps for a seed, maybe I may ask you, you have given many details that are visual, but are there some textural elements of the vision which you may share?
Or smell? Was there a smell?
Yes, some of the other senses.
That's true. I'm single-mindedly obsessed.
Well, I believe I have many, many obsessions, and the sunbeam can represent a lot of them.
Did it hurt when the sunbeam came out of you?
The sunbeam is just one description.
No, absolutely. It's a manifold vision, and I think we all realize that. Erdno.
Well, I guess you can use many other visions. I don't know what one can possibly work better, but Maybe there's a sound. Water waves crashing.
Flowing water is good.
That's interesting.
Like the sunbeam.
It's flowing water because my obsession carries me away. It takes control of me.
So many.
And makes me.
I apologize.
It's okay, Aurora. It makes me a different person.
I checked out for a second. Was Aurora overcome by the flowing water sound?
Yes. I realize that so many things that are important to us are flowing. Water is flowing. Blood courses through our veins. Wind pushes rain and weather to aerate our lands. Everything circulates.
And urine flows as well.
We are precisely. Indeed flowing creatures.
And so perhaps all that this personifies is the importance and vitality of change within us, of continuity.
Well, as I am personally convinced that this vision is about my relationship with obsession, and I know that this one point is going to hurt my case drastically, but it must be made. Mm-hmm. I do indeed need a restroom break, so you may not hear my voice for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You may feel free to discuss my obsession while I am gone.
I would, before you leave, mention that you should get your prostate checked, because that often is associated with frequent urination.
I think we all should have our prostates checked regularly. It's simply...
I get my spiritual prostate checked every year.
It's an excellent point also, caller, because there is such a thing as prostate health and spiritual health.
Definitely, and as your spirit grows, there is some chance of spiritual cancer.
Of having an enlarged spirit, it's risky.
Yeah, and also I don't have a real prostate.
Tell us about that.
There's nothing to talk about. I don't have one.
And this was some kind of a tragedy of your birth or something?
Zoroa, if I may, I think the answer was eloquent in its brevity also. And like Erno's euphemism, significant in its own way.
Perhaps the mystery is quite mysterious to me.
Well, can I intervene from the scientific perspective? Women do not have prostates.
No, but everyone has a spiritual prostate. Just not everyone realizes.
And what is the function of the spiritual prostate, if I may ask?
I was hoping you knew.
It makes spiritual sperm.
I don't know what the heck it does.
Well, no, I think it is unclear. I think, like the prostate itself, little is known about the function. But it is there, that is widely acknowledged.
Maybe Rosemary knows what the spiritual prostate does.
Nobody knows.
No, I don't know. I'm sorry.
It's a mystery.
Well, and it's one of these mysteries, I think, that may remain solved. Caller, are there any visions that you have had that you could share with us having to do with your obsessions? Visions, of course, being the brain's interpretation of to the scientifically minded or to the believer only in what one sees, the random fluctuations in nerve energy.
Let me intercede here. Mm-hmm. From my point of view, mm-hmm. These visions are merely the brain's interpretation of the openness of the universe and its patterns in your brain. So perhaps it is not meaningless, but it is the fluxes, the flowing universe, and perhaps patterns folded in time that we can see with our brains when we are asleep and leaving our minds open. And tonight, that is why I believe tonight we will all experience strange visions. For the universe feels very open and very changing.
Huh. What kind of strange visions could they be?
I am not sure, but I have felt deep within myself, and many of the people I've spoken to have agreed that there have been great mood swings today.
Mm-hmm.
That I have felt within myself great pleasure, followed by great misery, followed by great confusion.
Yes, I think that many of the topics which we have discussed today have been extremely loud and incredibly close to my heart. It is very poignant in the air, this moistness.
The slight discomfort which brings about so much change through flowing and lack thereof.
True.
Caller, have you experienced any strange emotional changes today?
Perhaps a resonance of some sort?
I think I'm experiencing it right now. Up until this point, not so much, but yeah, right now, yeah.
So are there any descriptions which you may give? Perhaps if there is a color which represents the feeling?
Yeah, I'd go with red.
So more general way to ask that question, Zoro, is if you were urinating in the ocean, what color would it be?
I believe that was implied.
So red. I think if we could all go around...
I think you need to get your spiritual prostate checked.
I agree with the caller.
Well, perhaps red can be an indication of an overconsumption of turnips.
Beets, possibly?
Aurora.
Yes.
And maybe we could all go around and describe what colors we might be seeing in our visions. If we like to approach it more euphemistically, more clinically... One may say that if a spear of light sort of broke through your chest, what color would the light be? Mm. Or another way is if one was reclining on the tiled floor of the spiritual restroom, what color are the towels?
I am seeing in both cases a light foamy green.
And Dr. Sharp?
Oh, mine is definitely chrome.
I think for me it would be something of the antelope. I'm not sure exactly.
I find that mine is the color of wheat.
Mine is just a nice brown. It's a balance. All the colors into one create brown, and I strive for balance.
I am sure that all of our colors mean something. Maybe we can all explore what they all mean.
Well, Antanas, let us start with you.
Wheat is very important to agrarian societies. And many of the Eastern European mythologies come from that agrarian need.
But isn't this about you and your vision? What is your association with
wheat? Yes, but
wheat?
What's the word that wheat makes you feel?
I see a cloud, and I remember Erno's vision.
This seems to be all you remember today.
Well, it was a startling vision. And Erno, you know, I obviously it was not my intention to make you the center of so much scrutiny. Suffice it to say, I have had a similar vision, and I have made a similar euphemism, euphemism.
Doctor, let me stop you there. It is perfectly fine. I understand that The association with my vision and urine is highly probable, as is as because my job as a potionologist does require me to drink a lot. I see it as a very straightforward association. It just surprised me that you were so forward with it and so...
Candide.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Well, I think we're all coming here out of a place of perhaps not love, but certainly acceptance.
Acceptance and forbearance.
As the case may be.
So. I think we should all combine our colors into one stream.
Mm-hmm. I think Rosemary has done that successfully.
Good.
The color brown is actually very, very beautiful.
Rosemary is a true visionary.
Thank you, Antanas.
For myself, the light green, the color of celery. Perhaps I have been eating too many vegetables.
I like this color brown. I recall many times in youth becoming lost in brown things or brown ideas. Brown.
Yes, it is like the mysterious door.
It seems to be undervalued for some reason or another in this culture. And yet...
Brown.
Yes, brown.
Mm.
And yet every time I see the bark of a tree,
mm-hmm.
or the eyes of a brown-eyed person.
Mm.
Well, you know, from the scientific perspective, if we all decided to ignore racial divides and mate with one another, the resulting human skin tone would be brown. And so to me, brown is the color of the absence of race, which I think is actually a wonderful thing.
A limiting mixture.
A balance.
Mm. Interconnectedness.
Brown is the color of racial equality.
It's a equilibrium.
Is not brown only all colors in pigment, but not in light? Is not white light all of the colors?
I wonder about your obsession with the color brown, Doctor.
How does brown make you feel?
Well, brown. Yeah, brown. You know, one of the great mysteries in my life, not to directly avoid the question, is how it is that orange is related to brown. Because they are related, but I have no affinity whatsoever for orange things. Orange people, orange hair, all these orange things. And I know I'm seeing these startled looks, but
we call it red hair here.
But we all know it's orange.
Man, what do you have
I understand. And the strange thing is this orange, it may invoke so many feelings, mm-hmm. but if you add orange to the brown, it is indistinguishable. You may not tell the difference between the two.
And yet I believe, again, this pattern recognition that Dr. Sharp mentions. In my youth, I remember being beaten by an orange-haired man.
Well, I mean, one can say this, that you know, we see very few redheads, and genetically that means that it's that people who are redheads carry recessive genes or gene mutations. And so maybe what your aversion to red or orange is actually an evolutionarily programmed aversion. They are technically carrying a mutation.
No. Don't succumb to the fear of redheads. There's nothing to fear.
There's no fear of redheads. I'm not necessarily saying there should be a fear, but, you know, redheads do, you know, tend to have fair skin tones and have, you know, defects in transport of pigment. And so, you know, if you are a light pigmented person, you may not be better off, especially a desert person.
Well, I only care about spiritual defects.
Well, and look, I think I may have misspoken because I have no fear of redheads. It's orange that...
I think so, Dr. Sharp. The problem I have with your theory is that I do not understand how it is that you may sense the mutation which you believe there is an aversion to. I mean, we do not experience DNA on the visual level. It is this tiny little molecule right inside
of
us.
I think that's actually an interesting statement, and if I may so, quite an incorrect statement. In fact, we experience the results and the translation of DNA on a visual level all the time. We can see identical twins and they look the same, and that is a manifestation of the physical molecule visually.
Well, Dr. Sharp, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we are out of time.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Dr. Sharp, thank you so much for being with us. And also, Rosewater.
You're very welcome.
And Aurora.
Namaste.
Thanks also to Zoro.
Thank you. And as always, thank you to all the listeners out there.
Thanks to Erno.
It looks like you will have to answer my question next week on the show, Doctor.
I look very much forward to it. And thanks also to Antanas.
You're very welcome.
Thanks to our many callers, and apologies to those we were unable to get to. This is Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human. Music for Human is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you, here every Friday at 7 p.m. Ma'a salama.
Number one,
cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two,
look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three,
cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four,
cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice, be legal, be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Opinions presented on this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. This is Terribles. WMBR, Cambridge. 88.1 FM.
Greetings, planet Earth, wonderful city of Cambridge,
beautiful greater Boston area.
Welcome to Terra Voice. My name is Maria Cassidy.
And I'm Allison Schneider. We have the honor of being your new co-hosts.
We are incredibly excited to be hosting this show. We have a lot to live up to. And no, we're not just saying that because Emily Moberg is here, making sure we don't break things. Thanks, Emily.
Thank you, Emily.